Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
All right. Well, okay. So the gang's all here. This is an episode of Fruit Loops Video Club Patreon release only, and we are reviewing the film LA 1992. It's a documentary, and it's very graphic. It was made in 2017. It is 114 minutes long.
114. I think it's more like 147. Oh, no, never mind. An hour and 47.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
How dare you?
I'm going to shut up.
You know what? What do I know? And it's a film by the Academy Award winners Simon Chin, Dan Lindsay, and TJ Martin, and Emmy Award winner Jonathan Chin. Where did y'all watch the movie? What platform? Because I couldn't find it on National Geographic, but
you
also
couldn't?
Didn't look that hard.
I watched it on Prime.
Uh-huh. Mm.
I was just going to say it was available on National Geographic, but it wasn't working very well for me. So I just went ahead and rented it on Prime. Mm.
Samesies.
Yeah, well, actually, I wasn't able to watch it.
Oh, you weren't?
Oh,
well. I was busy. I just wanted to tune in anyway.
Yeah, yeah, anytime.
You're always welcome. Yeah.
Well, guess what? We're going to tell you all.
We're going to educate you. Yeah.
And where did you watch it, Minnie?
So I couldn't find it. I thought it was supposed to be on Netflix. I looked for it there, and then I looked for it on Prime here in Canada, and I couldn't find it there. I ended up watching it on Disney Plus, which you wouldn't think, you know.
Huh. What?
But
it's different.
Yeah,
in Canada, they have Discovery Plus and Disney Plus together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
well, that's great.
Look
so
at
people
Disney now
look at them go. People tuning in now can find it. So I watched it on Google Watch.
Oh, okay.
So it is about the LA riots and the aftermath of those riots. And basically, the documentary opens up with this news guy from the 60s, and it's in black and white, and he's talking about the Watts riots, which are, like most of the uprisings in the United States, precipitated by police fuckery and police brutality. There's always, I can't think of one riot that we've talked about on the show or that I know about in my lifetime that wasn't precipitated by police brutality or a police murder of somebody.
Yeah.
And that becomes important in the end of the movie. So he's talking about all the violence that the quote unquote rioters, we don't say that anymore, but the community, the actions that they were taking out of anger after the police brutalized a
what
person.
Is that?
Oh, I need to mute it.
Oh, okay.
My dog is having a moment. Sorry, I forgot that you'd be able to hear that. Yeah, no, she's being dramatic because she wants attention.
That's all right.
Pooch. Hi, Pooch. So then we cut to the city of LA, and it's 1992, and there's some dudes on a radio talking, and they're saying really vulgar things about suspects that they're trying to pursue, and they describe them as N-words, as animals, and describe what they're doing. So we see Rodney King being beaten. Question, where were you guys in 1992 when you saw the video?
Well, I had seen this video numerous times before, but it still made me cry. Just watching it, I was just sobbing when I was watching it. Oh. And it brought back memories of that time because I was a young person at the time. I was in my 20s at the time. And it was on the news quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So I, the first time I saw it, you know, I was just in my house, just watching it. And it was heartbreaking.
Yeah. What about you, Beth?
I was married at the time and I had two little kids. I remember seeing it on the news and it was really upsetting, but I didn't understand everything that was happening. I don't know if I wasn't paying attention as much because I had little kids. But everything that happened afterwards, I don't think I fully understood. And probably because I'm white, too.
Yeah.
I think that it was like that in the documentary. They said this was all a lot of this footage was stuff that hadn't been seen before. So I think a lot of this stuff the public didn't see. Mm-hmm. And so similarly to you, I was also confused. I understood why there was upset about the verdict. And I understood that, you know, his beating was horrible and unjustified. But the stuff that happened after, the way the news covered it, it was all about looting, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And right. I understood nothing about that. All of the other stuff that happened after. It just hopped straight from guy got beaten, everyone's upset that they were not found guilty, and then suddenly looting. And that's the way it was explained to the public. Pretty
much. Yeah. That
this show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries. Okay. Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So nice. I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah. I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's better, HELP.com/fruit.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I only asked because I was in second grade when I first saw the video. And
you saw it at that age.
Uh-huh.
Awful.
Well, you don't get the luxury of not seeing violence when you're a child of color in the United States.
Yeah, I guess so.
So we watched it numerous times.
Wow.
In the company of lots of different family members. It seemed like every day we were going to somebody's house for dinner or something, and the video would be on the news and the grownups would have something to say about it. And me and Mike, right. I have like 60 first cousins. So the kids were all like, that's really messed up.
Yeah.
That's really messed up. That's really messed up. And the grownups echoing things like, see how they do us? This is how they do us. We've been saying this for a long time. Oh, but they got it on video now. We mm-hmm. got him.
Yeah.
That's why everybody was so mad.
Yeah.
Happened.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it when they were found not guilty. I was like, what?
Yeah. What do you have to do?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because it was on video.
Yeah.
Yes. Completely. And you could see it was unjustified. You could see he was just laying on the ground like, you know, please stop. And they just like it was so brutal. It was brutal
and violent. I don't remember hearing what the officer said, maybe in this new version that was in the documentary, but it seemed inaudible to me. I didn't know what
they didn't make that clear. I don't think at the time you couldn't hear what they're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And Rodney King was kind of vague about what they were saying. Like I remember he was asked, did they say any racial slurs? And I don't know about Rodney King's cognition. Does anybody remember when he was on Celebrity Rehab?
No.
Okay.
I did not see that.
What? Okay. Well, I eat that shit up. So Rodney King was on Celebrity Rehab and part of his trauma was this event.
Right.
And they got into his history. He had a history of abuse by his father, who was also an alcoholic. And Rodney King had problems with alcohol and drugs as well, which is kind of why he ended up in the system in the first place.
Yeah.
But they made it sound like he had developmental delays. And so when you hear him at that press conference and you hear him in interviews, to me, it makes sense why he's not the most articulate guy of the bunch.
Yeah. Also, I don't know how much he remembered because they were asking him, you know, how many times did they hit you? And he's like, several times.
Yeah.
He got hit like 57 times. That's more than several. I don't, but I don't know if he remembers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know? Something that traumatic happens to you. And I don't think you even remember things in order or it's just all a big blur, you know?
Yeah.
So how's he supposed to remember, you know?
That's a good point.
Like, or even hear, like, you know, if there's
what they're saying,
you know, bat whistling towards you and bam, you know, how are you supposed to even hear what people are saying or even focus on what people are saying when all you're trying to do is just not die?
Yeah.
Right. Whew, got me with that one. So this documentary was really, really rad. I think very well done because it was entirely archival footage. No commentary, no people in a nice, a well-lit room talking about, well, you know, this and that. It was entirely archival footage. So it feels more raw and authentic. And so I really appreciated that. So
I did too. Yeah.
There was also some background audio playing at the beginning of the film. It was audio of Martin Luther King talking about law enforcement. There was some other person talking about the history of law enforcement, how most of these Black people in LA fled from the Jim Crow South to Los Angeles. And the history that they are angry about, it's not just one instance. This is a prolonged experience of over 100 years with a contentious relationship with law enforcement, which, by the way, most of the law enforcement at the time of the Watts riots were involved in the Klan. They used to live in Compton. And once Black people moved in, they all fled. Join the police force so they could beat everybody up. And so what it was very obvious to me was that there was two in the beginning. They made this very clear in the beginning of the documentary. There's two different Americas that Black people see and experience it one way. And then white people experience it another way. But then the documentary went a little bit further and talked about the non-white immigrant experience and how that played a role in what happened in Los Angeles. So who do we see next? Oh. The immigrant part was kind of interesting to me because they talked about how big of a port Los Angeles is and just how many immigrants there were coming in the 80s and 90s. It was like 2 million.
Wow.
Coming for the American dream. We had I'm from there. Los Angeles had a Black mayor at the time who really celebrated the city's diversity and how this is going to be great for the city of Los Angeles and how excited he was, what an honor it was to stand and be a representative for such a diverse city. And then Papa Bush is president at the time. And
gross.
What's that?
Gross.
Yeah. Boy, it's, oh boy.
A little slightly better than Reagan, but yeah, not
yeah.
Very much.
Yeah, not much.
So Rodney King gets beaten on March 3rd, 1991. Then there's a whole timeline. And so March 3rd, 1991, Rodney King gets beaten. Then we learn about the Asian storekeeper who shoots the teenage girl.
That was so
over
awful.
A glass of a bottle of juice. Mm-hmm. This girl was a straight A student. She had middle class parents, black middle class parents, came from a good home, had no reason to steal anything. But the shopkeeper.
And a bottle of orange juice. That's yeah. it. Like, and what the shot fuck? Her
in the back of the head.
Yeah. She was walking away. As, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that kind of added insult to injury. And it was also on video, yeah. right? So it inflamed the community even more and it raised tensions even more. So then April 29th is when it all went down. Old Whitey was hanging out down the street over at Magic Mountain the day the riots busted
out. Oh my
out.
God. Wow. And
he talks about his mom like freaking out, like, you got to get out of there. Anyway, so a bunch of officers, Sergeant Stacy Kuhn, Officer Lawrence M. Powell, Theodore Briseño, and Timothy E. were acquitted. And they were acquitted. It is significant where the trial took place. You guys know about Simi Valley?
Well, just what I saw on the documentary, what they talked about, very, very white.
Yeah.
Lots of police officers live there.
Yeah. It is like yeah. If I got gravely injured in Simi Valley and died or was at near death, I wouldn't want to be treated in Simi Valley. You know, it's just,
yeah.
it is overwhelming how white the place is. Dudes with trucks, with the testicles hanging on the back. Ugh. It's that kind of place. But I went to college right next door in Thousand Oaks. So
lucky,
we would go
yeah.
to Simi. Ooh, yeah, it was great. But Simi Valley sucks. And it is, again, very white. And I wonder what would have happened if the trial had not moved to such a white venue with a mm-hmm. mostly white jury.
Wasn't it an all-white jury?
Was it?
I think it was mostly white. It was definitely, there were no blacks.
No black people.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So it just is so problematic.
Makes no fucking
right?
The, sense.
Right. Mm-hmm. How the justice system is supposed to work, a jury of your peers, right? And it just seemed, and they probably should have tried each officer individually
yeah.
For all of their actions. And when the not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty yeah. verdicts
one
came
right
out,
after the other.
Yeah. yeah. And I was also glad they showed the reactions of people. There was an old man, he was sitting in a diner and he was like, he just like, oh, God.
Yeah. He just got up and yeah, like started walking away. Like,
yeah. And you can imagine the disbelief when
oh,
we
yeah.
have it on video. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so April 29th, 1992, everybody knew this was going to be big. So I think law enforcement starts to group up and kind of very nonchalantly, come up with a plan of how they're going to respond because they are also like celebrating that their guys got off. So they're more, they seem to me more excited about that. Black leaders are gathering at all of their respective churches in the neighborhood to be as peaceful as possible, encourage people on the right thing to do in this situation and give people a place to vent and experience the trauma of this verdict. And then outside the courthouse, all bets were off. I mean, it turned ugly so fast. And I don't know if anybody was surprised by that. Were you guys surprised by the tensions and then the reaction of the people outside of the courthouse?
No.
Okay. So then demonstrators go to the police headquarters. And that's when all the media sort of swarms in on South Central. There's helicopters above. Hey, by the way, do helicopters fly over white neighborhoods? Because I was under the impression they don't.
They do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do?
We get them over here.
Neighborhoods I've lived in.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we get them here all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I lived in Spokane, which is very lily white, I never saw a ghetto bird. But in every other place I've lived, there's always been whenever there's a crime or a robbery,
it probably depends on how big your city is.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't see them as frequently here in Edmonton, but when I used to live in Mesa, different places in Mesa, Tempe, mm-hmm. I used to see them
all the time. Yeah.
I think in Tacoma, they don't fly over our north end, and that's kind of the rich white part of Tacoma as much. But that might have its root in other, like, divides. The poor areas where the hospitals are, and there's a lot more helicopter traffic over those areas. But that might just be because the hospitals are there, or it might be because people don't necessarily get listened to if they complain about the noise there. I don't know. Are any of you familiar with Tacoma?
Yeah, no. SeaTac, baby.
I live near the Hilltop area.
Okay.
So we get them over our house a bit with the hospitals. Just
there's one flying over my house right now.
It hurt you.
So the only reason I ask is there's an interesting conversation about the metamorphosis of policing in the United States. And this, I think, is at this period of time of these uprisings, is when we see the militarization of the police on steroids.
Yeah.
The National Guard comes in, the police and their riot gear. I think the police chief even said, well, the National Guard came, but all their ammunition didn't came. So we couldn't send them out right away.
Yeah.
I don't recall if there was tanks in.
It looked like there were, like, in that parking lot where they were like, what the fuck were they doing though? You know?
I don't know. They're sitting in that parking lot for like 2 days. To different people.
they were afraid to go in. I feel like, so the looting started, and I feel like that was kind of like, in a way, like, I dare you to come down here. I dare the police, you know, I dare you to come down here, because what they wanted was to do to the police what the police had done to Ronnie King. So they wanted to do some things to get the police to come down. And then the police didn't. And so it just started escalating. It's like, oh, well, that's not enough to get you to come down here. See what I'm going to do next. And then, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone was like specifically thinking that, but I think that's the effect that it had. Mm-hmm. And then like, maybe they weren't even realizing that that's kind of what they were doing. Maybe. I mean, I could be wrong, but it just kind of seemed that way. And the more the police ignored them, the more they escalated, to the point where then they started, you know, stopping people in cars and pulling them out and beating them. And then, you know, the Korean businesses, you know, setting them on fire and breaking in and stealing their stuff too. And, you know, it was just like, how far does this have to go before somebody comes in here? Because what they wanted is a direct confrontation with the police, you know?
Yeah, I think the folks outside who were engaging and throwing things, basically anybody not black at the intersection of Normandy and whatever else, was fair game. Yeah. And Reginald Denny is a household name. Like I think he's in rap songs. I remember after this happened, he was on a bunch of talk shows talking about his experience after getting ripped out of his semi truck. He was just working, y'all. They ripped him out. They threw bricks at him. And the close-ups of his face are horrific.
Yeah.
And if you, there's one particular gentleman who has sort of remained, not in the spotlight, but people know his name, the guy who threw the brick. And at the time in the 90s, he was not remorseful for throwing the brick at Reginald Denny. I don't know how he feels about it now, but I heard him specifically say, anybody who wasn't black who came in that neighborhood was fair game. They even attacked media people and people who were people of color. And we've talked about this before on the show. And Martin Luther King's voice did play in the beginning of the documentary. But a riot is the language of the people who are unheard. And these people were extremely frustrated. Yeah. And I'm curious what, before we get into the Korean shop owner class, what you think, what else could have been done to avoid, this is the largest civil unrest in American history at the time of the making of this documentary. I don't know if it's true after 20.
Yeah. An aside, when they put that out there as like the most expensive, you know, civil disturbance in American history. And at that moment, I was like, I feel like someone's out there going, hold my beer, you know?
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Because it's building again.
Wait till 2020 happens. Yeah. I just, as a discussion, like, what else could have been done?
Those people could have been found guilty. That's what could have been done.
Yep.
And yeah. there could have been an immediate discussion with the powers that be once they were found not guilty of the wrongness of that. Mm-hmm. It basically, you know, they were found not guilty and it was like, okay, over, that's it. You know, no discussion. The masses of people felt unheard and mm-hmm. they needed to find a way to be heard. They also wanted retribution. Yes. And they were going to take that retribution. They wanted to take it on the cops. And so that's why the civil disobedience to get them to come down there. But then the cops wouldn't come down there. I mean, I guess I can understand why they would be afraid. Mm-hmm. But they are the cops. They're supposed to do that. So, mm-hmm. and then, yeah, what could have been done is it could have been handled by the powers that be in a much better way.
Yeah.
Not leaving masses of people feeling like they're ignored, unheard, not valued, all of those things.
Masses of citizens.
Yes.
You know, these are citizens yeah. in
citizens of the,
of the community, yeah. of the United States, of the yep. city of Los Angeles. They yeah. work, they live, they pay taxes, they clean your homes and wash your cars, they serve your yeah. food, and they are citizens at the end of the day. I agree. I think this all could have been avoided if the trial hadn't been moved and if they had found him mm-hmm. guilty. And one of the looters, I hate saying that word, but one of the gentlemen who was taking some items that he perhaps had not purchased from one of the stores mm-hmm. said to one of the reporters in Espanol, he said, I think that this all could have been avoided if the rights of Rodney King had been granted that night when he got pulled over, but they yeah, weren't. Yeah. So we're looting yeah. now. Bye.
Yeah. yeah. The other thing that one of the people said when they were talking to him, he's like, you don't understand. These people work 50, 60 hours a week yes. and they have nothing. And now they have less than nothing. So of course they're taking things. You
yeah.
know what?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. yeah. You. I mean, the fat cats steal wages every fucking day. What's yeah. the big deal if I steal a box of shoes? I was so glad that they included that in the documentary because there's several villains in this documentary in the greater society, including white supremacy and capitalism, inequality, wage theft, redlining, so many things. And I hope that Fruities can see all of those villains right at play. It's not just the people throwing bricks and setting fires. There's a reason.
Don't forget Daryl Gates.
And don't forget Daryl, right?
What a piece of shit.
Oh, my. Gates must go. Where is he? Is he in hell yet?
I don't know.
He should be. He really should be. I mean, one thing I wanted to point out is the city council in LA, which is more powerful today than it was back then. They had a hearing with the chief of police, and they were like, these people are not animals. They're human beings and they're citizens. And then the chief was like, look, if you guys aren't on our side, then we're not going to be good police anymore. Okay. Yeah. So you're going to be sorry.
So watch what you're doing.
So yeah. Watch what you say. And then the Asian guy was like,
did you just threaten
are
us?
Are you threatening us?
And he's like, you? How dare you?
How dare you? Okay. Academy Award to the police chief.
No. What? That was so fucking ridiculous. It was so obvious that he was threatening.
Yeah.
God, this is a professional organization. It was like Real Housewives.
Who do you think
style?
We are? Well, we think you're a piece of shit. So.
Actually, we exactly. We think you're a murderous, corrupt piece of basura.
We've seen that again in Tacoma after Manny Ellis was killed.
Really?
Yeah,
the same thing. Like if you guys don't side with the police, then
oh my god,
we won't be police anymore.
We're not allowed to police, so we're not going to.
Oh my god.
Okay, well you're fired. We'll hire some better ones.
Absolutely. Bye.
Fuck off.
Bye. You know? To the left. Like
it's like what other person in the world can
threaten to not do their job
if they're criticized about the quality of work?
Yeah. Imagine if I told my boss.
Oh my God.
If you don't like my TPS reports, then
I just won't do it anymore.
Yep. But you still have to pay me.
Yeah. What the fuck? Yeah.
3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast that holds weekly gatherings around the campfire. Let me tell you what you're going to get. You're going to hear stories about demonic possessions, prison stabbings, skinwalkers, glitches in the Matrix, cult leaders, missing 411, Night Marchers, Operation Paperclip, Mesopotamian Devil Worship, and so many monsters it'll give Kanye West a runaway for his money. Pop and meme culture also aren't off topic. A camp where laughs and scares are constantly competing for first place. We're just a group of friends trying to bust each other's balls, find the best stories, and expand the circle in the process. 3AM, the comedy horror podcast, not for the faint or fragile of heart. Let's go.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get 6,000 cash, give us each 3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com. Or wherever fine podcasts are found.
So it looks like he's dead now.
Oh, good.
So he died in 2010, apparently.
Yay.
So he's in hell.
Of an evil black heart.
gotta be black.
Good question. Oh my god,
evil white heart.
My anti-blackness is showing. So I wanted to talk about the Korean shop owners. So in the context of South LA, which at the time was mostly Black, South Central Los Angeles was mostly Black. There were a lot of housing projects, a lot of poverty in the area. And there was a lot of people disenfranchised, but there were also in the 80s, a lot of Asian immigrants that came in. And the difference between Asian immigrants were able to get things like business loans, home loans, and Black people still were not. And so they would put their businesses, because they too wanted to pursue the American dream, right? And they would put their businesses in communities that were, I mean, the rent wasn't that high in South Central Los Angeles, right? And so to the Black community who were there, it seemed unfair. And it also seemed predatory. And there may have been a miscommunication. And, you know, like sometimes when I go to the Black people store that's Asian owned to buy my hair, there are people who are... It's a contentious relationship because they're selling all these Black products and some Black people feel like they are not kind when we are bringing our business there. And that's not necessarily new, but at the end of the day, they are just regular citizens trying to make it, take care of their families, live in a safe place, work in a safe place, and just be all right. That's what we all want. And the villain in this scenario, Asian and anti-Blackness, is white supremacy and capitalism, right? Yeah. It fucks all of us. So I wanted to talk about that. I also wanted to talk about the shop owners, their shops were getting looted and the Korean immigrants who owned the stores took up arms themselves because remember the police were not going in there. And I think it's important to know is that a lot of those Korean shop owners were veterans of Korean wars. And were trained in warfare. So if the police weren't going to come, they didn't give a shit, right? And they didn't need the police, really. They had their weapons, they had their training, and they were going to protect, you know, what was theirs. And so I was delighted to see at the end of the documentary, the Asian community like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
We need to work together. We are all fucked if we don't work together. One of our listeners was sharing with me a post, an anti-Black post from an Asian community forum, and she was really upset by it and asked for my thoughts. And I've always said that I think things work better when we all work together, right? And I'm thinking of like with this Black versus Asianness, like when Malcolm X was assassinated, one of the first people by his side was an Asian woman to try to render aid and help him. And she became anti-Black and pro-Asian activist for the rest of her days.
Anti-Black?
And so No, pro-black. Sorry. Anti-racist. Anti-racist. Oh my God.
I was like, wow, that took a turn.
But
you heard it here, guys.
Oh my God. Cancel me. I'm gonna shut down our social media so I can't get hate from this. Everything works better when we all work together, but in that moment, the tension was so high that I don't even know if either community could have seen the hurt and harm that each of them were experiencing at that time.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it was, you know, and again, I don't know if this is something that's intentionally done, but it just kind of seems like the sort of divide and conquer tactic to keep people of different races pitted against each other so that they don't notice or that they have less energy to combat the overall, you know, white supremacy that's going on. You know, I mean, I'm sure the KKK loves to see Asians and Blacks hating each other because then they can't get together and
overwhelm.
Them. Right.
Yeah.
So divide and conquer, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I feel like there was a little bit of that going on. Like I remember at the time during the early 90s, mm-hmm. I remember at some point somebody telling me that, oh yeah, Blacks and Koreans hate each other. And I said, well, why? Because this was the first I was hearing of this. And mm-hmm. he says, well, I don't know. And I'm like, but they do. I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay.
So yes. So I guess, you know, I was just like, spread the word, guys. Blacks and Koreans hate each other. So, you know, it's like a self-fulfilling kind of prophecy. It's like, oh, am I supposed to hate them? Oh, okay. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's just divide and conquer, you know?
It is. And I know Jeremy Lin, you know, the Lin Sanity, remember the Asian basketball player? He talked about the anti-Blackness he experienced before he knew better. And part of his miseducation was that back home in his home country, they would show images of Black people doing bad things, either in media or in the news, right? And so he didn't know anybody who was Black until he got to the United States and started playing with Black players. But you have no context to confirm or deny what you see. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what it is until you get here. And that was another thing that blew me away, is all the immigrants were like, this is America. This is unfair. And I was like, Is somebody going to tell them?
When that one woman was in her shop and holding her arms out and yelling, this is America, this is America, I was hearing it differently, like, yeah, this is America.
Yeah.
You know? From her point of view, it's like, it's not supposed to be this way.
It's not supposed to be. Exactly. It's not supposed to be this way.
America.
Yeah.
She had guts, though.
Yeah, she did.
Standing up and keeping people from going into her store. I'd be like, go ahead, take everything.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't even be there. I'd be like, all right, well.
It's all you guys. I'll call the insurance man in the morning. Don't worry about it. Yeah. An interesting thing to think about, too, was the amount of people who were displaced as a result of the fires.
It was like New Orleans. It was the Katrina, you know.
Yeah, the Red Cross came in and there were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think it was really good that they showed it in the documentary, because we have to remember this wasn't just grown up police. This wasn't just grown up adults fighting in the street.
Children
and elderly people were really affected by this. There was images of women in the shelters walking around with babies in there, like trying to calm the babies down.
Yeah.
And I just wonder what became of those kids.
Me too. I was thinking that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where are they?
I don't think I knew any of that in the 90s. Like, it was over and then it was over and we're on to the next news cycle, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As white people, you know, there was like, that's, yeah. And we didn't live in the area. So.
Were you in California then?
No, we were in Arizona.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I was in Northern California. And again, watching it on the news.
Yeah.
And a little foreshadowing, the jury got that one wrong. Black people were furious. And when OJ obviously did it, we didn't. Yeah. Black people didn't care. It was, this system is really fucked up and we're going to show you how fucked up it is.
Yeah.
So back to the timeline, there was a state of emergency. The National Guard comes in and eventually May 4th, the riots end. There's footage of people like cleaning up, and there's people very honest on the news in the community. Like, it's all great. You know, you see the fires and you see everybody cleaning up, but I doubt it's going to last.
Yeah.
A little foreshadowing there.
Yeah.
And then you see the guy. I don't know. He's not Machete. Who's that actor who was like, walking with the people? He's like, we're going to get our brooms. We're going to get our trash bags. We're gonna clean
up. I don't remember what his name is, but yeah, it's a Latinx actor.
He's a famous Latinx actor. If it's not Machete in a movie, it's this guy. But I don't remember his name, and I'm very, very sorry. Oh, and then the last part is it closes with Papa Bush giving a totally tone deaf speech.
Oh, my God.
And they showed Bill Clinton just like,
oh, yeah.
He was just salivating, like waiting to respond. That's how we won the election, because he listened to the people who were greatly affected by this. And Papa Bush didn't. And so he lost very badly.
So is that why Black people love Bill Clinton?
That's why we called him our first Black president.
I see.
Yeah. And he went on Arsenio Hall and played the saxophone.
Oh, right.
Oh, he did.
What other white person had ever done that before? I mean, how Black is that, right? So, and he cheats on his wife. I mean, how Black is that? I'm just kidding. So we cut to that same newscaster who was in Watts, Black and White TV in the 60s. Recounting what happened in the 60s to the backdrop of footage of what happened in LA in 1992. And it was
crazy.
the exact beat for beat.
Yeah.
They say police brutality. There's fires, people getting pulled out of cars. And he's like, hopefully this is a, he made it sound hopeful. Like, if we can't cure the disease in our cities, what will become of America?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that was it. And then they showed a bunch of stats about what the damage, the amount of people died. I think 58 people lost their lives. 2,400 or so people were injured. There were about 3,000 or 4,000 people who were arrested, I think is the number. Don't fact check me. I mean, there's no way to know anyway, like the truth. Yeah. I could Google it. But anyway, so a lot of people were arrested. And then we see 2020. And we also, Tyre Nichols wasn't that long ago either. So with all that, I have some discussion questions. Can't we all just get along?
Okay, let's go into discussion questions.
Why can't we all just get along?
Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay, so has anything changed?
No.
Nope. I was like, it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
It's going to happen again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Human beings suck.
Oh my God, we're the worst.
I know. I'm like, I can't wait till we all go extinct. It's like,
asteroid going to get us?
We'll die with it. Maybe. Like, I don't want to go out to space because, you know, we don't want to further our.
We're just
going to
make it worse.
The galaxy.
Aliens don't want us out there.
Real dark there.
I feel like you're in my head. What was the most shocking thing? Like, what did anything take
the part that shocking about 3/4 of the way through the documentary, they showed like people hurt and dead. And that was really upsetting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That shocked me because that was an aspect. I don't think they comment. I've never heard how many people died. No, I've never seen
the pictures.
Wound. Yeah, a dude with a gunshot wound to the head, people dead on the street.
Yeah.
That was jarring for sure and really disturbing. Anything to add, Minnie?
Yeah, just, well, the same thing, just the brutality of it. Just seeing human beings at their worst and the things that they do to each other. You know, the story was what I remember of it. You know, maybe there was more at the time. But what I remember of it was, you know, there was this awful thing that happened to Rodney King, and then there was no justice served, and then suddenly looting, you know, which didn't make sense to me, you know, like, how does this all connect, you know?
Yeah. Where's the rest of the story?
Yeah. I think they didn't tell the rest of the story.
I
was kind of unaware of all.
I was very unaware of all that other stuff. Yeah.
And I don't even remember hearing about the girl that was murdered.
No, I did not hear about that at all. Mm-hmm. And that was really shocking too. Just that story, like she's walking away and the lady shoots her in the head. And then the lady
with a shotgun
and the lady is found guilty of
manslaughter.
Manslaughter.
She was guilty, but yeah, then her but sentence then they was let her go. Community service. Yeah. And fine.
Yeah. So nothing.
It's just a slap in the face to the community. You know?
For shooting
a girl,
a teenage girl,
a child
in the back of the head while she's walking away when she thought she stole orange juice and she didn't do anything. Yeah. It was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was really upsetting.
Yeah.
But my favorite part of the movie was the guy who was lighting the trees on fire.
Oh my God. Mine too. The news reporter was like, "Al, we're receiving word that there's a fella lighting trees out there."
And they got and he's going camera. From tree to tree.
He's got his lighter. He's just like light all around and not ashamed at all. They should have asked what his name was because I would like to catch up with him today. But that was really wild. Like, what?
Yeah.
You can do that?
Not on a normal day.
Damn it. Let's see. What was your reaction to Rodney King's statement? Because they say he was the reason for this whole thing. He really wasn't.
He wasn't the reason.
He wasn't. Yeah. But before memes were a thing, all the comedians, all the Black comedians were making fun of Rodney King like this. Can we all just get along? Like, people would do their own spin on his pain, right? His trauma. And I don't think I had an appreciation for what that really was for Rodney or what that really could have been like. Until I saw this, because I was just thinking of, oh, look, Martin Lawrence, you know, Martin is making fun of, you know, people would just say whenever there was a dispute, can't we all just get along, you know, like Rodney King style. And I did not have an appreciation for that until this documentary.
Yeah, it's really sad.
It is.
From DNA testing to the Dixie Mafia, Crime Capsule brings you new stories of true crime in American history. I'm your host, Benjamin Morris. Join us for exclusive interviews with authors from Arcadia Publishing, writing the hottest books on the most chilling stories of our country's past. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on evergreenpodcasts.com. Crime Capsule. History so interesting, it's criminal.
It is, and again, that trauma never left him. Despite efforts of the best doctors and the best rehab centers, he got a settlement of, I think, $3.8 million.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But by the time Celebrity Rehab on MTV caught up, or maybe VH1, caught up with him, he had spent it all. And he eventually died engaged to a woman. I can't remember her name, but that's why I was wondering, were all the jurors Black? Because she was a juror in some big case.
Yeah.
And he had three daughters. And again, the more things change, the more things that sound the same is kind of what I took away from all of it.
Yeah.
And same shit, different day.
The way it was presented as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to do any narration to make that point.
Yeah.
They just used the footage. Mm-hmm. And it was just a mirror image of what happened in Watts.
That
was startling, actually.
Yeah.
The exact sequence of events. And that's why I was like, this is going to happen again.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
It's just a matter of when, you know, when's going to be the catalyst this time.
Yeah. So you're not going to believe this, but I'm a police abolitionist.
So I'm curious though. And you've said this before, and I do understand the system's broken. It needs to be broken down. But what do you see as, because in my mind, people are terrible. People do terrible things to each other. So then what do we do? Like, how do we deal with that? If there's no police, like, what do you see in place of that?
So I think it's a big problem that's hundreds of years old. And I think it's a big problem that's going to take lots of solutions and lots of time and effort. And I also want to say that I don't envision a world with no police, with no safety patrols or law enforcement individuals.
Okay.
I just don't see it as,
the current system.
They get, their budgets are ridiculous. Yeah. And meanwhile, they're taking money away from schools.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So in my imagination, every school would be well-funded. All the parks would be well-maintained.
I see all
the after-school programs would be maintained.
Yeah.
There would be free health care. There would be free mental health care. everybody would be able to have a job. If you lost your job, it didn't mean you lost your home. Money that we funnel to the police and military could go to support those things. That's in a perfect world.
So you're a socialist.
Yeah, I am.
So am I.
We all are. We all, socialism, fire department, police, that's socialism, y'all. So we're already doing it. Yeah, so that's what I imagine.
Okay. Yeah, I'm on board with that. Yeah.
Community policing is also something that's key.
They made kind of a mistake with they were calling it the defund the police movement.
I think it sounds like,
you know, we're going to take all your jobs away directly to these people who, you know, I agree that, you know, the system is broken, but there are some people in that system who are good people and basically saying, you know, we're going to take your jobs away. So the reaction to that is, of course, going to be negative. I think the word that they should have used was reallocate the police.
Refund.
Refund the police.
That was my idea. Refund the police.
Yeah.
It sounds very positive, but you know.
Because the idea isn't to take them away. It's to move.
Change the system.
Yeah. Change the system around. Move some of the money into things that would make
community
unnecessary
support
for there to be as many police, and maybe retrain some of them into different jobs that they might be better at, you know?
Yeah.
And make it unnecessary for people to commit crime, that they need crimes of survival.
Now, there always will be, because there's always going to be greedy people. There's always going to be psychos. There's always going to be, you know, there's always going to be some kind of crime. So we do have to have something in place to deal with that. But
don't disagree
with taking away as much as we can of poverty and unfair distribution of wealth and things like that, you know?
Oh, you know what blew me away? I never thought I would say this. There was a police officer after they sent in the National Guard, and he had his, you know, police officer like clear mask on, and he was crying.
Yeah.
And it was like he couldn't believe that he was doing this or that this was happening.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what he said. And this is, I don't know many police. I'm just very fearful of them. I know Captain Hunter, who we did a crossover episode with, and that's it. And I am just admitting to my learning and trying to be a better person. I had never seen empathy like that on a police officer. And I, for a long time, didn't believe that they could display it or had it. I'm ashamed.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
But I was really surprised by that.
It was moving.
Yeah,
I do. I do know some. I actually dated a police officer for a while. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there are two brands of them. And one is the type that is very dislikable, which is the type that goes in because they're interested in getting power and being respected and all of that. But there's also a section of them that the reason they go in is because they want to help people. And they really do feel for people, and they want to do their best to be there for people. And I have had times when I've needed to call the police, and not having that fear that you have of them, I've done so. And I have had very good conversations with them in which they were very empathetic, or, you know, you could tell that they really cared about people. And that's the reason that they did the job, not because, you know. So I feel like there's kind of two types of officers that you'll come across.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not surprised to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's interesting. I'm glad you bring that up, because it brings me back to, like, at the beginning, where were you in 1992? And I was aware of most of this behind the scenes, the connection between the verdict and the violence. What happened? But I wasn't aware that there are police officers who really do want to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also part of a system, right? They are citizens who need jobs as well, and who also want their kids to go to good schools. That had never crossed my mind until I saw this. So I'm going to hell anyway, but I was really surprised by that. So anyway, any final thoughts, like, in the last few minutes, y'all?
I was about 1.5 when the LA riots happened.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't actually see the footage until college.
Mm-hmm.
And it was moving. But it didn't, I went to a small liberal arts college here in Tacoma. And I do think that in those settings, sometimes it's taught more as history so that we don't have to feel bad about ourselves. Because even though they liberal arts and at least on the surface level were very welcoming to minorities coming into the school, it definitely wasn't where they were making their money. It definitely wasn't a major part of the student body, even though you would not necessarily know that looking at the website.
I can't tell you how many of those photo shoots for college I was involved in.
Yeah. But, get that one black lady over
but
here.
Fine, if you want me to pose, I'll do it.
Yeah, it was. There were just very few classes that really, including that one, that made it seem like a current issue. Which it obviously is.
Right.
So that was something that I'm going to have to go watch that documentary now and just see, because I'm sure that we got kind of a slightly prettied up version of it.
Diluted.
Prettied up. Prettied up. That's a good way to put it.
It was a really good documentary.
It was. Yeah.
After I watched,
it made me cry multiple times. I will warn you.
And I had to watch it in sessions. Because it was hard to watch.
I actually I watched that one and then I watched LA Burning because I got like so fascinated with the story.
How was that one, LA Burning?
It's good too.
Okay. I'll have to check that one out.
Right. Yeah. Well, this has been fantastic. Brynn, love having you so much.
Yeah, thanks again.
Tell us your puppy's names.
Oh, yeah. So
we love having them too.
This is my one-eyed tuxedo cat, Zuko. He decided to come say hi.
Cutie.
Oh, my gosh. Jump
cutie.
And Kenzie, the other dog, has gone to the other room. This is our Great Dane, Tarly.
Oh, wow.
He and Zuko left a cuddle. we'll literally never turn down scritches. We have one other cat who's a very gray, floofy little girl named Zula.
Aww.
Yeah.
Well, we're so glad that you and your pet family joined us. Minnie, thank you so much. I love, that's why I love the video. Like, we do the podcast and it's just me and Beth. And we can't like, we can talk to each other, but like, what other people think?
Yeah.
So that's what I love.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I like this.
Yeah.
So can I share one last thing with you?
Sure.
We talked about books last time I did one of these with y'all. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to share one of my new favorite YA authors with you. I think it got banned a lot in Florida.
Oh, nice. I'm going to buy it right now.
I'm going to buy it right now.
Aidan Thomas, he's a trans Latinx author.
Oh, okay.
And it's fantastic. The best inclusion I've ever seen in a YA novel.
Real?
Main character is trans. And then there's a couple like non-binary characters. It's really good set in. It's a fantasy novel. Mesoamerican mythology.
Oh, interesting.
As much as I love my Greek mythology, it's super refreshing not to have like the same pantheon. The second one's coming out later this year. Ooh. And I also super enjoyed his first novel, which I just finished and lent to a friend, called The Cemetery Boys. Again, a trans main character, love to see it.
Yes.
That one is more about gaining acceptance, and this, like, it's just accepted that he's the main character's trans. Like, this is very like, yeah, no, why would anyone question who you are like that? So Cemetery Boys is very Dia de los Muertos kind of mythology.
Oh, cool.
Still Mesoamerican.
Okay.
Cute gay boy love the YA level.
Nice.
So I had it on my desk, so I thought I'd
okay.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Me and Beth are recording on Tuesday, and this is going in the shout out section.
Yay! Nice.
thank you.
I just put it on my wish list.
I want to read it, but I can't if there's no audio version.
There should be. Okay. I'd be shocked if there was.
Yeah, I think there is. When I put it on my wish list, I think there was an Audible.
Yes! An Audible audiobook.
And I don't know what we're going to do next, but Rain, if you think of any suggestions.
What about the book? That one that, Minnie was talking about, the cocaine one.
Oh, yeah, crack.
What was it called?
I think it was called... was it crack or was it cocaine? I think it was called crack. Cocaine Chaos or something in Conspiracy. It was really good.
Okay.
It was really good.
Love yeah. it. Crack is a hell of a drug. Haven't tried it.
It
yet.
Is.
We just saw Cocaine Bear yesterday.
What's that?
We just went and saw Cocaine Bear yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see that
hilarious.
Movie.
So, a little gratuitous score, if that's not your thing.
Better.
You might need to avert. But I was surprised by their production value.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, I was trying to like explain it to my kids today. Like, yeah, the bear did drugs. Isn't that amazing? Anyway. Okay. So I just want to say thanks again to Bryn, Beth, Minnie. I apologize if I said anything offensive, but thank you for letting this be a safe space where we can learn things and be better. And this was a lot of fun. Looking forward to the next one. To you listening, thank you for joining us. And look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
Hello?
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Cool. I'm here now.
Hey, Bryn.
Hi. Yeah.
So, yeah.
How dare you?
I'm going to shut up.
You know what? What do I know? Papa Bush is president at the time. And
gross.
What's that?
Gross.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy.
Like, what the fuck were they doing, though? You know?
I don't know.
Like, I feel like someone's out there going, hold my beer, you know?
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're looting now. Bye.
I'd be like, yeah. Go ahead, take everything.
Yeah. And don't forget Daryl, right?
What a piece of shit.
Oh, my Gates must go. Where is he? Is he in hell yet?
I don't know. Who do you think we are? Well, yeah. We think you're a piece of shit. So,
so it looks like he's dead now.
Oh, good.
Oh, good.
So he doesn't know.
That took a turn.
I went
real dark there.
I feel like you're in my head.
There's one flying over my house right now.
It hurt you. I was surprised by their production value.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
My favorite part of the movie was the guy who was lighting the trees on fire.
Oh my God. You can do that? May I be excused? When's the meteor coming?
Yeah. Can we just get to crank up that, you know, global warming a little faster? Just like burn us all out.
Let's just like stop fighting climate change. How about that?
Yeah. Lean into it.
Yeah.
Today lean is into Arctic it. Sea Ice Day.
The detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
True terrors of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. On our podcast, Disturbed, terror takes center stage. Each episode is a journey into the darkest corners of human existence, delving into bone-chilling tales of kidnappings, serial killers, maniacs, and the very essence of your worst nightmares coming to life on this weekly true horror show. Disturbed is not for the faint of heart. It's an exploration of real, unadulterated horror sourced from everyday people. Each episode is a descent into the macabre, where we narrate stories that will leave you on the edge of your seat and crawling in your skin. We navigate the disturbing narratives that lurk in the shadows, offering a raw and unfiltered listen into the most terrifying aspects of the human experience. Enter at your own risk and let the unsettling tales unfold in the haunting realm of Disturbed. And remember, listeners, stay safe out there.